The tension between mind and matter has haunted philosophy for centuries. Beneath the abstractions of metaphysics lies something deeply personal, the struggle to understand what it means to be. To think, to feel, to exist as both observer and participant within the same reality. Every philosophy that attempts to reconcile these opposites, body and soul, object and subject, matter and meaning, inevitably draws its lineage back to René Descartes. His declaration, Cogito, ergo sum, was not merely a statement of logic, but an act of rebellion against uncertainty. By locating the ground of truth within thought itself, Descartes erected a fortress of reason that could withstand the tides of doubt. Yet in doing so, he also divided the world, between the res cogitans and the res extensa, between the thinker and the thing. That division became both philosophy's triumph and its curse. It granted the clarity of method, the discipline of rational inquiry, the precision of mathematics, but at the cost of intimacy with the world it sought to know. What was once continuous became cleaved, the universe turned mechanical, and the soul an anomaly. For centuries, the project of modernity unfolded in this Cartesian light, an age of certainty, experiment, and structure. But in that brilliance, a shadow grew. The sense that the human spirit had been reduced to a variable in a system it could no longer feel. Carl Jung entered that shadow with a lantern rather than a scalpel. Where Descartes sought foundation in the clarity of reason, Jung sought coherence in the depths of the unconscious. His concern was not the architecture of matter, but the architecture of meaning, the symbolic order by which we interpret the world and ourselves. He understood that the mind could not be divided without consequence. To know the self, one must engage not only the clear daylight of consciousness, but also the twilight of dream, myth, and memory. If Descartes built the map of reason, Jung dared to step beyond its borders. The conversation between these two men, though separated by centuries, still defines our intellectual predicament. On one side, the hunger for certainty, on the other, the recognition that the self is not a system, but a living mystery. Between them stands the modern critic, figures like Anthony Gottlieb, who inherit the fruits of rationalism, yet recoil from its metaphysical reach. Gottlieb's skepticism toward Descartes reflects a broader discomfort in our era, the unease with any philosophy that dares to claim a foundation. Yet in our rejection of the old certainties, we risk losing more than dogma. We risk losing the very language through which self-knowledge becomes possible. This essay begins, then, not as a defense of Descartes nor an apology for Jung, but as an anatomy of their shared impulse, the desire to understand the interior world with the same seriousness we grant the exterior one. Between rational foundation and psychological depth lies a question that neither science nor spirituality can evade. How does consciousness become real, and what does it mean to know oneself? Descartes, the architect of rational foundations. To understand Descartes is to enter the crucible where modern thought was forged. He emerged in an age of doubt, a world where inherited certainties were collapsing under the weight of discovery. The medieval synthesis of faith and reason had fractured. The cosmos that once revolved around divine order was being redrawn by observation and mathematics. In that intellectual chaos, Descartes sought one immovable point upon which knowledge could be rebuilt. His method was not the destruction of belief, but the purification of it. He wished to find, beneath all opinion and authority, a foundation that could not be denied. The result was the cogito. The self as thinking substance, irreducible and self-evident. I think, therefore I am. It was a line drawn against skepticism, a declaration that even in total doubt, the act of doubting confirmed the existence of the doubter. Yet the elegance of that move concealed its cost. By securing certainty in the realm of thought, Descartes exiled the world of bodies, senses, and feelings to secondary status. The external became suspect, mediated through perception. The self became a detached observer, the world an object to be known. In seeking to ground truth, he split the human experience in two. This dualism, mind and matter, subject and object, would come to define Western reason. It gave us the precision of science, the power of mechanism, the very architecture of modern knowledge. But it also created an emptiness at the center of that knowledge. If the mind stands apart from the world, then meaning itself becomes derivative, constructed rather than lived. The Cartesian method birthed the age of reason. but also the age of alienation. We became masters of analysis, but strangers to ourselves. And yet, Descartes' legacy is not one of mere reduction. His ambition was profoundly human, to seek clarity in a universe that no longer spoke with divine authority. He wanted a philosophy that could stand on its own legs, that did not lean on revelation or tradition. In that sense, his method was an act of courage. He faced the abyss of uncertainty and declared thought as the bridge across it. The tragedy, if there is one, is that the bridge also became a wall. The self, fortified against doubt, found itself imprisoned within its own reason. It is here that the dialogue with Jung begins, not as opposition, but as inheritance. For Jung, the Cartesian split was not to be discarded, but to be healed. He recognized that reason without psyche becomes sterile, just as psyche without reason becomes lost. Where Descartes sought a foundation in the clarity of the mind, Jung would later seek it in the wholeness of the soul. Both, in their own way, were architects of certainty, one through logic, the other through meaning. Jung, the cartography of the inner world. If Descartes sought to anchor truth in the clarity of reason, Jung sought to restore depth to the terrain of experience. He looked not upward to universal axioms, but inward to the symbolic and the unseen. The psyche, to Jung, was not a simple organ of thought. It was a vast ecosystem of images, instincts, and inherited patterns. Where the Cartesian project divided, Jung's aimed to integrate. He believed that the human being could not be known solely through the intellect, for consciousness itself was but the surface of a deeper ocean. Jung's work transformed introspection into method. Dreams, myths, archetypes, and synchronicities were not dismissed as illusions but treated as data, evidence of the mind's symbolic intelligence. The unconscious, far from irrational chaos, revealed its own grammar, its own architecture of meaning. Through this lens, the Cartesian "I think" becomes only a fraction of the full equation. Beneath the thinker lies the dreamer. Beneath reason, the reservoir of centuries of unspoken experience. Jung redefined self-knowledge as a dialogue between these layers, the conscious and the unconscious, the rational and the mythic, the personal and the collective. In this light, the cogito appears not as an endpoint, but as a doorway. Descartes had established the thinking self as the foundation of certainty. Jung asked what lies beneath that self, and whether thought alone can bear the weight of being. For him, the mind was not an isolated observer of reality, but a participant in its unfolding, a bridge between the inner and the outer, each shaping the other. What Descartes described as the separation of mind and body, Jung reimagined as a dynamic tension to be reconciled through individuation, the process by which one becomes whole. The Cartesian clarity that defined modernity had stripped the world of spirit, and Jung sought to return it, not through religion, but through psychology. His was not a revolt against reason, but an expansion of it. He refused to accept that knowledge must always be analytic, that meaning must be measurable, that reality must be confined to what can be proven. The human psyche, he argued, speaks in symbols, and those symbols are not superstitions. They are the language of the soul's evolution. To ignore them is to misunderstand ourselves at the most fundamental level. If Descartes built a fortress to defend the mind from chaos, Jung built a labyrinth to explore it. Both men sought order, but one through exclusion, the other through integration. The modern world inherited the fortress but forgot the labyrinth, embracing precision while neglecting depth. Jung's cartography was an act of reclamation, a reminder that the rational and the irrational are not enemies but companions in the long pursuit of wholeness. Anthony Gottlieb and the Fear of Foundations. Anthony Gottlieb stands as a voice of the modern intellectual temperament, skeptical, historical, and wary of metaphysical excess. His criticism of Descartes is not rooted in disdain for reason, but in a broader cultural suspicion towards certainty itself. For Gottlieb, the cogito and the edifice built upon it represent an arrogance of thought, the illusion that one can escape the contingencies of history, language, and perception to stand on pure ground. In The Dream of Reason, he portrays Descartes less as a liberator than as a dreamer entranced by the promise of clarity, a promise that, in the light of modern science and psychology, appears naive. Yet in his aversion, Gottlieb mirrors the very impulse he critiques. To reject foundations altogether is still to make a claim about where knowledge begins. His skepticism, though sharpened by centuries of hindsight, remains trapped within the Cartesian frame it seeks to escape, the need for justification, the demand for certainty before commitment. His criticism exposes an unease that defines our age, the fear that to seek a foundation at all is to commit a philosophical sin. Gottlieb's rationalism, tempered by empiricism, aligns with a worldview that prizes provisionality. Knowledge must remain open-ended, hypotheses revisable, truths contingent. It is a sensible stance and one that guards against dogma. Yet there is also something sterile in it, a quiet exhaustion beneath the posture of caution. The refusal of any ground becomes its own dogma, a faith in perpetual suspension. We end up circling the abyss rather than descending into it. Descartes may have been guilty of overreach, but at least he reached. In this respect, Gottlieb's critique inadvertently reaffirms the necessity of Descartes and Jung alike. Both men believed that understanding requires a center of gravity, however provisional. For Descartes, it was the thinking self, for Jung, the integrated psyche. Gottlieb offers instead a historical commentary on their failures, but no alternative architecture to replace them. The historian replaces the philosopher, the curator replaces the creator. It is an intellectual posture that documents meaning rather than risks making it. To be fair, Gottlieb's caution is not without wisdom. His unease with Descartes arises from a genuine concern, the recognition that the search for absolute certainty has, in the past, birthed both dogma and delusion. But the alternative cannot be an endless deferral of conviction. Without some principle of orientation, whether rational, psychological, or moral, our skepticism devours itself. We begin to doubt not only our beliefs, but the very possibility of believing. The irony is striking. In disowning Descartes' foundation, modern thinkers have kept his structure. They still privilege the rational over the intuitive, the analytic over the experiential. Jung's challenge, by contrast, was to risk belief again, not in the sense of blind faith, but of inner coherence. His project sought to restore what Gottlieb's critique inadvertently erodes, the courage to affirm meaning even when it cannot be proved, the confluence of reason and psyche. The dialogue between Descartes and Jung is not a contest between opposites, but a revelation of their shared incompleteness. Each recognized in his own way that the human being is both a creature of thought and a vessel of mystery. Descartes built the scaffolding of method, clarity, precision, the will to reason. Jung descended into the substrata of meaning, the symbolic, the ancestral, the unspoken. Between them lies the possibility of a synthesis, a philosophy that thinks with both hemispheres of the mind. Reason, taken alone, becomes sterile. It describes the structure of experience without inhabiting it. Psyche, taken alone, becomes lost. It drowns in its own depth, unable to articulate its discoveries in language that the world can hear. Descartes gave us the architecture of understanding, Jung the texture of it. What we inherit from both is not their answers, but their questions. What can be known? What can be felt? How might these two forms of knowing coexist without destroying each other? The modern predicament is that we have privileged analysis over integration. We trust models more than meanings, signals more than symbols. Our sciences dissect the world with exquisite accuracy, yet the self that measures remains opaque to itself. The Cartesian subject became the scientist, the Jungian subject became the patient. But the human being is neither instrument nor illness. We are the field in which object and subject converge, where thought and image meet to form coherence. To deny either pole is to misrepresent the human condition. Reconciliation begins when we abandon the fantasy of purity, pure reason, pure faith, pure empiricism, and accept that truth is relational. Descartes sought certainty by separating mind from matter. Jung sought wholeness by reuniting them. Their methods differ, but their motive is the same: to heal the fracture at the heart of consciousness. In that sense, the cogito and the collective unconscious are complementary metaphors, each pointing to an interior world whose laws we only partly understand. The one insists that awareness is real, the other that awareness is layered. The synthesis of reason and psyche is not a theory, but a practice. It demands the precision of analysis and the humility of introspection. It asks us to think without arrogance and to feel without chaos. This confluence does not dissolve the distinction between science and soul. It makes dialogue possible between them. The The philosopher must learn to dream. The psychologist must learn to reason. Both must learn to listen toward an integrated philosophy of self. The tension between Descartes, Jung, and their modern interpreters reveals less a battle of ideas than a fracture within the modern self. We have inherited Descartes' intellect without his courage, Jung's depth without his discipline, and Gottlieb's skepticism without his historical awareness. Each, taken in isolation, offers only a fragment of what it means to know. What is needed now is not another system, but a reconciliation, a way of thinking that neither dismisses the unconscious as illusion nor surrenders reason to the tides of feeling. Descartes' enduring gift was his faith in clarity. He believed that thought could illuminate the world, that coherence could be built from first principles. Jung's gift was his faith in mystery, the recognition that not all that is real can be rendered transparent. He taught that truth must be lived before it can be known, and that the psyche contains its own intelligence, irreducible to logic. Between these two visions lies a task: to think deeply without severing ourselves from the soil of experience, to reason without amputating wonder. Anthony Gottlieb's critique reminds us that foundations can become prisons, but it also warns, perhaps unintentionally, of the opposite danger: a civilization so wary of error that it refuses to build at all. To live without a foundation is not freedom, it is drift. The challenge, then, is not to abolish certainty, but to redefine it, not as dogma, but as dynamic balance, an equilibrium between clarity and complexity. Philosophy must once again become an art of orientation, not a contest of negations. To move toward such integration is to recognize that the I of the cogito and the self of Jung's psychology are not adversaries but facets of the same inquiry. The first sought to secure existence through reason, the second sought to redeem it through meaning. Their meeting point is the lived human being, the conscious creature who both questions and dreams, who analyzes and imagines, who doubts and still dares to believe. In the end, Descartes reminds us to think, Jung to feel, Gottlieb to question. Each warns against an excess the others invite. The mature mind must hold them all together, not in synthesis that erases difference, but in dialogue that sustains it. To be whole is not to resolve contradiction, but to live within it consciously, aware that thought and psyche are not two worlds, but one seen from different depths. And perhaps that is where philosophy must now return. Not to rebuild the fortress or the labyrinth, but to inhabit both, knowing that between reason and mystery lies the truth of being human.